When the art day gets rough, you just gotta keep on punching. And here's your Thunder Punch Daily with Jersey Drozd.
Sometimes we just want to get to the good parts of the project, the exciting parts of the project, the dramatic parts of the project. Not all this setup, world building, draftsmanship, thumbnailing, perspective drawing. We just want to get to drawing the cool stuff, right? That was my day today. So let's see. You know, reflecting on my art day as part of the Art Sound Off Challenge. artsoundoff.com, where every day for the month of November 2014, I am recording an audio journal of what I'm working on as a cartoonist, as a teaching artist, and I guess as a human being? I don't know. So the day started out mostly with email-y kind of stuff, you know, emailing people about dates for events, workshops, emailing my buddy Dan Mishkin about some projects that we've got in the works, you know, and nothing that exciting. It's more like, oh, well, we needed to rephrase this paragraph on this pitch document kind of thing. So nothing where I got to draw something cool. But after a morning of that stuff, calendar management, to-do list management, things like that, I got to put in some time on an upcoming Boulder and Fleet page, boulderandfleet.com webcomic I'm working on about a bear and a bird that go through, travel the world and right wrongs, sort of like The Incredible Hulk or Quantum Leap, but with animals. That's the tagline I've been using, and I'm sticking to it for now. It's the next page for me, but not for anybody else at the time of this recording, because I think the latest page that dropped was page 4 of the latest chapter. I'm just finished coloring and lettering page 9 to keep my buffer in place for as long as I can. Hopefully I can build up an even bigger buffer through December, because come January, things are looking like they're going to be pretty busy. And then as we roll into the spring with Kids Read Comics and ALA and convention season, yeah, I know I'm going to fall behind. So I really should be looking at December as being like, buffer building time. But I'm getting sidetracked here. I started this thing with getting to the good part, getting to the exciting part. So around page 9 of the story is when some action finally starts to happen in the Boulder and Fleet comic. Not to spoil anything, but it is an adventure comic. There's going to be action in it. That shouldn't shock anybody. And I've already telegraphed a little bit in terms of, if you go to boulderandfleet.com and look at the header image, there's like, it shows you, well, and the cover, for crying out loud. The cover that's on the website gives you a sense of what the conflict is going to be. But so I got to an action scene, and after drawing, you know, several pages where the coloring was pretty naturalistic, not opportunities for, not as many opportunities for what I would call expressionistic colors. Expressionistic, is that the right word? What I mean is color that represents, that delivers emotional punch, that isn't just simply to represent a reality, but to represent like sort of like an emotional reality of the scene. And so as I was drawing the scene of the characters leaping into action, I got to use a lot of contrast and a lot of drama. And it was, gosh, it was fun to work on. I had a really good time working on it. Before I started, I was, you know, this goes back to, you know, a couple of episodes ago where I was talking about this whole idea of focus. You know, when you're focused, you're not thinking about what happens before or after. But that's not to say that focus makes you immune to the perfectly human emotion of apprehension. And I still encounter it on everything I work on to varying degrees, right? So like if it's something I've never done before, a lot of apprehension. If it's something I've done a lot of times before, a little bit of apprehension, right? There's a sliding scale when it comes to that. But there was like a little bit of apprehension as I approached the page, because I knew I wanted to do something that was like dramatic and expressionistic and emotional and interesting, and not representational. So like they're on this cliff face looking down into this valley, and when they start going down the cliff, I decided like, oh, I'm gonna wash this in like reds and purples, and I'm gonna, you know, use really extreme shadows on the characters. did the rocks just change purple? They were a grayish blue before that. Why are they purple now? Well, that's what I'm attempting to do here is deliver the way the moment feels. And it's fun to play with those kinds of extreme color contrasts and harmonies as well, because like, okay, well, if it's expressionistic color, and this is maybe where some of my colorist friends could weigh in on this. I would love to hear from you guys on this because I do not, like I said before, I don't consider myself a colorist as such. I can do coloring to a professional degree, but it's not my main, not my wheelhouse. How about that? But like, let's say you got, you know, a red key light in the background. And then obviously you would have green in the shadows, right? Or if this is an expressionistic scene, if this is about the emotion of the scene, would everything be bathed in reds and purples? So even the shadows, or does that flatten everything out? Now, I don't know the answer to that, everybody. I made my choices on the page and I'll look at it in another week or so to see if it needs any tweaking or adjusting. But in terms of, you know, the contrast and working that all out, I took a tip from Tony Cliff of DelilahDirk.com. Fabulous comic, terrific adventure story. You know, it's, if you're a fan of like Indiana Jones style pulp adventure, but a little bit more elevated than that, I would highly recommend you check out Delilah Dirk and the Turkish Lieutenant. It's got gorgeous action sequences and great characterization and terrific shot setup. Oh my gosh. I mean, in the, side note, I'm distracting myself like crazy today, but side note, I got to make a mental note to not recommend comics by talking about the craftsmanship in there, because I don't think that that's what sells a book to the general public. Like whenever I'm talking, I notice this, that whenever I'm talking about comics on the Comics Are Great show and we do the book recommendation segment, I always default to, oh, and look at this panel layout setup, and look at his or her shot setup, look at the color themes that they use in there. Oh, it's so beautiful. That's not how you get the you know John Q. Public, Jane Q. Public to pick up a comic book. They want to know about what's the story, what's the content. Because in a perfect world, nobody's noticing that stuff. They're just experiencing it, right? Like you don't. I guess if you're amongst like movie aficionado friends, that you would start talking about that kind of stuff, and perhaps. You know, Comics Are Great is meant to be a comics advocacy show. So anyway, I'm just making a mental note for my own purposes is to stop talking about it that way. What's great about Delilah Dirk, I'm going to get back to my point here. What's great about Delilah Dirk is that it's a rip-roaring, awesome adventure, and it's a buddy story between this awesome woman, assassin, mercenary, adventurer character and this really uptight soldier. That's why you should read it. And all the other stuff is just icing on the cake. But anyway, Tony Cliff gave a tip on Twitter. Not to me directly, but he just put this tip out on Twitter. And I wrote it down because it was so good. He suggested that when you're coloring, use a black and white adjustment layer over top of all of your layers to check the values as you're coloring. In other words, if it works in black and white, if the values and the contrast all work in black and white, then it probably works in color too. It doesn't ensure that you're using good color theory necessarily, like good color harmonies and counter harmonies and all those things. But it at least, you know, it's a quick way to thumbnail. We get a thumbnail view of how the contrast on your page is stacking up. So I color in Manga Studio, or I'm coloring Boulder and Fleet in Manga Studio. And there's another little sub note that I want to make there before I wrap. And the way I do it is, I mean, coloring in Manga Studio is actually very, very similar to Adobe Photoshop. So if you're used to Photoshop, learning coloring in Manga Studio is, it's a breeze. There's like a couple of idiosyncratic things to learn in terms of terminology in there. For instance, an adjustment layer in Manga Studio is called a correction layer. Same thing. It functions exactly the same way, though. So I made a correction layer in Manga Studio, a hue saturation one. And then I just took the saturation all the way down to zero, and boom, I've got a grayscale version of my page just by toggling on and off a layer. And it was super helpful in double-checking the values on the page, especially when I'm shading Fleet, who is all yellow. So it's hard to see sometimes if I've got enough highlight on her because, you know, it's yellow and then like less yellow, more into the white spectrum, but not pure white, right? And when you put on that adjustment layer, the black and white adjustment layer, that is, it makes the shading much more visible and apparent. So at least with the highlights on yellows. So thank you, Tony Cliff, Tango Charlie on Twitter. Great guy to follow. He does great work, and it's a great tip that I would be curious to see if anybody else has ever tried it and what benefits one's derived from that. Now, coloring in Manga Studio. I bought a while back a pack of brushes from Ray Frenden, frenden.com, frenden.com is where you can get his Manga Studio brushes, and they're terrific brushes. I use, there's a dry brush he put in that pack that I use for all the line work in Boulder and Fleet. It has this wonderful soft edge that mimics the way ink interacts with paper in a way that I've never seen any other brush do. I mean, when I'm inking those pages, to me, when I you know, look at them on the screen, they're almost indistinguishable from natural media inks, real world inks. And he's had a pack of painterly brushes, and this is one of the great things about the new Manga Studio is that the painting in that is so good. I mean, it almost feels like real painting, especially if you're painting or drawing on a screen, like in the case of my Surface Pro. But I did notice a funny little thing that I need to mess with more. So I was trying to play with some different shading techniques today, and some of the painting brushes or painterly brushes, they interact with the other colors that you've laid down. So you throw it on your flat color, maybe throw a gradient on there, maybe you throw a couple strokes of highlight and shadow. And then you take one of these painterly brushes and it interacts. It takes the base color that you've chosen to fill the brush with, as it were. And it, as you move the stroke across your palette or your canvas, the paint on the brush interacts with the surrounding paints and mixes them together. So it does look like natural media painting. But I have grown accustomed to working a lot with selections in after years and years of coloring in Photoshop. So I'll have a flats layer, and I will select the flat base color on the character, and I'll go to my color layer, and I'll start painting there with the selection on, right? You use the magic wand, tap it, now it's selected. You cannot paint outside of that area, right? Well, with some of these painterly brushes, they interact with the surrounding colors regardless of whether or not there's a selection there. And I haven't figured out how to solve this. My guess is that it was designed that way because, like, when you're painting on a real canvas, that's what happens, right? Wherever you put that brush down, it's going to interact with all surrounding colors, even colors that are on the outside of the figure. And then you just do a lot of correcting and tweaking and touching up to sharpen the line if you want a sharp line there, right? But when you're using that kind of painting technique under line art, with selections, the assumption is, for me, that I want the paintbrush to only interact within that selection. Doesn't do that. So, like, let's say you've got Boulder's Fur, which is like this very, very light blue, and he's standing in front of a green background. And if I run one of those painterly brushes along the outside edge of Boulder's arm, where it intersects with the green background, it pulls some of that green into the stroke, as well as the light blue in his fur, which can be a problem given the way I color in Manga Studio. So, okay, let's explore the problem. The problem is that I've got one method that these brushes don't work with. Is it time to change my method, or is it time to look into how to tweak the brushes so that they will work with my method? I don't have a whole lot of time to really investigate this, but I will as I slowly move through subsequent Boulder and Fleet pages. I'll take a few minutes here, a few minutes there to keep punching at it. But if anybody else out there has a solution or has figured out how to, like, what setting is exactly making the brush interact with all colors, regardless of whether or not there's a selection there, boy, that would be very helpful to me. But if nobody knows, that's okay. I'll figure it out eventually. So that was all I got for, observations today. Just a lot of coloring. And then now that I'm done with that page, it's time to move on to RoboForce corrections. I got some ink corrections to make. Got feedback from the writer of the comic, and he's happy with how it's coming together, which is good, good. And I just got to tweak a few things on one of the characters, reflat those pages, or the fixes, and then, oh gosh, what does the Trello board have for me? Oh, and then I've got to work on some workshop materials. I got to make some new printouts for a workshop I'm leading next week in Ann Arbor at the Neutral Zone, kicking off this thing where I'm going to be leading a comics workshop that is in part of a larger day of workshopping where the characters the kids create in my workshop will be turned into video game characters in a video game workshop. So you create the character in my workshop, then you take the components of the character that you draw digitally and turn them into sprites that you can have interact in a game. So like the things that you build on the character in my thing, what kind of abilities do they have? What are their weaknesses, their strengths? What do they want? What are their hopes and fears? You take all that and then you're going to build in game mechanics that respond to the things that you created in my section. It sounds like it could be super cool. I hope the teens who come to the workshop enjoy it. We'll find out next week, and I am certain that I will have an observation or two about that. So, who have you been listening to for the past who knows how many minutes? I'm Jersey Droz, cartoonist and teaching artist, comicsaregreat.com, boulderandfleet.com, leanintoart.com, artsoundoff.com. A whole bunch of us are doing these Art Sound Off daily reflections, so there's a lot to listen to in those feeds. The voiceover you heard at the top of this episode is Tara Platt of bugbotpress.com. The music was by my brother Elliot Droz of elliottdroz.com, and the hosting, if you're listening to this show in a podcatcher, was provided by Kablam, kablam.com, the one-stop printing solution for the independent comics publisher. And I will be back tomorrow with another Thunder Punch Daily, and until then, remember everybody.
Today, Orko was being chased by an evil robot. Orko was very frightened, but in the end, he overcame his fear and helped He-Man defeat the robot. All of us are frightened at one time or another, and it's nothing to be ashamed of. Fear is natural. It makes us aware of possible danger. Without fear, we'd wind up in all kinds of trouble. So never feel guilty because you're afraid. Listen to your fears. They'll help you stay out of trouble. Until later. Bye now.